Here we go.
The slow
realization. We are not talking about fan speed. Guys, I can't see the slides here. If we can fix that, that's great. If not, we are going to roll, okay? We're not talking about fan speed, but we are talking about sex in the context of marriage. And I think it'll be hopefully a really helpful time. So my name is John. This is my wife, Pam.
Hello.
We have been married 27 years.
27.
Yep.
26 of bliss.
26 years of bliss.
27 married.
27 yeah. years of marriage, right, 26 yeah. years of bliss. That's right. And so as a speaker, you're always supposed to kind of start out like why you should talk about this, you know, establish your credibility. So we have four kids. You know, I just kept telling Pam I just wanted to talk. I wanted her to hold me and things like that, you know, and we ended up with four kids. So we know what we're talking about a little bit. Pam and I have been around the Watermark forever, and back a long time ago, we actually taught an entire day on sex, literally from 9 to almost 4 or 5, all day long, talking about sex. And so we'll condense down and just share a few thoughts here, okay? Let's start with, always, kind of what's the goal? What do we hope will happen here?
Yeah, so you guys, if you're taking notes, the goal of the session, right here it is. The goal of the session is just to have your own unique conversation. There are as many unique stories in here as there are couples, and so there'll be lots of thoughts and ideas and principles you can apply, but just for you as a couple to leave here with your own unique conversation. And what comes out of that is just one step you can take towards oneness.
Yeah. So what's not the goal, to be super candid, is for you to have sex tonight. Some of you, like, that might actually be the worst application of anything we're going to talk about, just because of where you are in your relationship or things that you're sorting through right now as a couple. So if you came in here with a lot of angst going, man, they're going to make me have sex tonight, no, we're not, okay? But we are. What we are pushing for is that you would have your own unique conversation here, okay? And
if you have sex tonight, that's great.
That's great.
Date night, great.
I don't need to know. But, don't post it on social media, but... That's great. Okay. Good. So I want to talk about tonight, or today, I guess, with the time we have left, is, I started thinking about tonight already, what is it that couples think that have a great sex life, okay? So couples that have a great sex life, we'll start with number one, have a biblical view of sex, okay? And so that's where we're going to start with. You would expect that. We're here at church, and we could talk about this the entire time. There's enough in the Bible to talk, for multiple hours about a theology of sex, unpacking that. But here's one I want to start with here. Is that sex, first and foremost, is a sign of our covenant, okay? And I decided to turn... I wanted to start this way, like, at the very last minute. So I turned this slide in. All the other slides are good because other people saw them. And this is all me, that dangling six and the little B there. That's all me. No one else to blame. So I'm sorry. Okay. But as a Christian, when we have sex, we hearken back to Matthew 19, Genesis 2. Because when we got married, as Jesus said here, this is in response to a question about divorce, what we know to be true is that although Pam and I did choose each other, God also joined us together in a way that is supernatural and kind of candidly beyond comprehension. And so when we have sex, when you have sex with the person that you married, you are re-coveting together. It is a symbol of the covenant, very much like a wedding ring. When God made a covenant, he always gave symbols to go along with it. And for marriage, the active recoveting, the active symbol of our marriage and our covenant together is sex. So when we get together, we have sex. That is what we are doing. Now, can it be fun? Hopefully it will be. But we don't have to put any weird pressure on ourselves to kind of, you know, be some kind of sexual athletes or have, you know, wild, crazy sex. We're recoveting together. If we have wild, crazy sex, that's great. But it doesn't have to be anything that God didn't intend it to be. We're actually doing something really holy, really cool. We're reestablishing, taking our vows, so to say. And we're recoveting together. That's the unique symbol, which in Scripture, not so much today, in our society, but in Scripture, is reserved solely one man, one woman in the context of marriage. That's the only place that symbol is supposed to show up, supposed to be sacred. And so it'll just keep us from thinking incorrectly about sex and trying to demand things of it that God never intended, okay? Yeah. So number two.
Yeah, we also know that a biblical understanding of sex would just confirm that sex is good. And so go back to the creation account. God creates everything, it's good. He creates man and woman. He says, you're very good. They're standing there, Adam and Eve, totally naked in front of each other, kind of figured out what we do here. And God, when God says, be fruitful and multiply, okay, this is good. This is exactly what we're supposed to do. And not only is it good, but it's a gift to be enjoyed. And so God would say, yes, there's some functional reasons to have sex. You multiply, have children, subdue the earth. But then there's also just this piece that God gave us a gift. We all know what it's like to think about and prepare a good gift for our kids or our spouse and to watch them enjoy it. We just get so much joy from that. And that's just the way God is. He prepares this good gift, sacred, for a husband and wife in marriage. And when we enjoy it, that just brings him a lot of joy. And so sex is good. It's also a gift to be enjoyed.
Yeah, so it was, they understood, Adam and Eve would have understood it as good. This is before the fall, before sin entered the world. People were having sex, okay? And they would have saw it as good. So Adam, God gives Adam a good gift. It's an amazing gift to give a man. It's a woman with no clothes, right? And so God goes, I got you, Adam. And so they had fun and they had sex and they'd never had sex with anyone else before. They'd never seen anyone else had sex, never thought about having sex with someone else. And it was just good. It was just good, you know? And when they were being fruitful and multiplying, they were doing something that God had intended. And as Pam said already, it is a gift to be enjoyed. And so when you enjoy the gift, and there's a sense that you're giving thanks to God, and for some of us, it's hard to see it both as a good and as a gift, given the ways we've kind of grown up, right? And to see sex is good. You know, Ted Cunningham's got a great line. He said, you know, many of us were raised in churches where the messaging was sex is dirty, gross, and bad, and you should save it for the one that you love, right? And then so we get that messaging, and then now we're supposed to enjoy it. It's really hard for us, but it is good, and it is a gift that we should enjoy. So when a couple enjoys it, they have sex, they're giving glory to God. 1 Corinthians 10:31 says, whatever we do, whether we eat or drink, you could add sex in there, whether we have sex, you do it all for the glory of God, okay? So it's a sign of the covenant. Sex is good, and it's a gift to be enjoyed, okay? It's a good gift that God gave us.
Yep. So the next point, just couples that have a great sex life realize that everything is connected. So sex does not just happen in the bedroom, but it just happens all day. Happens in the kitchen, living room, and those are places you can have sex. But meaning that it just is all-encompassing of your relationship. And so for a woman that is not cherished and loved and helped, it's harder for her to be intimate. And ladies, for a husband who's nagged, disrespected, like it's harder for him to initiate and to be intimate as well. John jokes, he's like, usually I can push through that a little bit easier, but still it makes him not want to initiate if I'm not respecting, if I'm nagging or just not being kind to him. And so the way your relationship is the other, what, did you do the percent? We didn't do that yet. Just the relationship is when you're not being intimate, totally affects when you are intimate.
Yeah. So a metaphor that's been helpful for us is a story that happened to us a few years ago. I was late to a meeting here at church at night. So I'm leaving. I'm running out with my laptop in my bag and I go through the garage. My car's in the driveway. And right before I get in, Pam goes, hey, I've got some ideas about our sex life. And I remember stopped and I was like, okay, like, go ahead. And she goes, well, we can talk when you get back. And I was like, babe, like, I'm not hopping in a car after that intro. I'll be worthless through this meeting. Tell me what you're thinking. She goes, well, it's about the towels. I go, okay. Like, I don't know what you're thinking. I'm probably game, you know, kind of thing. And so she goes, no, it's not like that. She said, it's about the towels in the bathroom. And I was like, what? I'm not really sure what you're talking about. She said, well, before we have sex, what happens is you go and you will take a shower, you know, which I appreciate. You work out or whatever, and you take a shower, and I appreciate that. And then you leave your clothes and the towels on the floor. And that's hard for me. And so this is a topic that I care about, so I'm trying to understand. And I go, well, can you see the towels? And she goes, no. And I was like, I'm confused. Like, I don't know how these two things are connected. And she goes, well, what happens is when you dump them on the floor, I feel like I'm the one that has to clean them up. You know, I'll hang up your towel and put your clothes up. And it feels like, you know, you're disrespectful on this side around in our bathroom. Then you come over here and now you're all sweet and, you know, attentive and things like that. And it feels incongruent. It's hard for me to have sex. And so I think I said one more time, like, but can you see him? You know, I'm okay. I don't think that way, you know, but that's okay. If you do, that's easy. Like, I'll pick up my towels and, I'll pick up my clothes. If I've got to buff out the floor before we do this deal, like, I'll do that, you know? And it's just become a really good metaphor for us. A lot of times we think we've got like a sex problem, and we might. That might actually be a thing. Something might be going on physically. Something might be going on with our history that's happened, or some kind of addiction that we're getting through. Those all might be the case. But generally, what's going on is there's something else in the relationship that we need to address. And there's some metaphorical towels. So now, when we're not doing great, it's one of our diagnostics. Hey, is there any towels right now that we need to address, you know, that one of us need, one or both of us need to pick up, okay? So everything is connected. Don't separate it out. You may, but odds are you're probably not dealing with just a sex issue, okay?
Exactly. Yeah. Another great point is that couples that have a great sex life selflessly handle their differences in desire. And so if you've been married any length of time, you just know there's a difference in male and female. There's a difference in the way we think. There's a difference anatomically, just everything about us in God's creative way put us together. And so there's going to be a difference in desire. There's going to be a difference in the amount of times one of you wants ideally to have sex and one of you, the other person does. And there's just going to be kind of coming together, selflessly handle those differences. Typically, lots of times we do make the joke, like the guy's the one that always wants it and the lady's the one that has to push through the headaches. We know that's not always the case. 30% of women have a higher sex drive, and more probably have a higher sex drive than their husband. And then we also know, again, if you've been married any length of time, it changes depending on life stage, hormones, stress, just whatever's going on, that it can just be different who has the higher drive. And so really there's just an opportunity here. Whoever has the lower desire and sex drive really has a chance to serve the other person. And it's kind of a power. And we talk about in Matthew that Christ was the ultimate example of handling power well, that he came not to be served, but to serve. And so it's just an opportunity to say, hey, I'd love to have it more than we do, but I'm going to serve you. And then for the other person to say, hey, I'm going to, maybe a time that I may not choose to, I'd love to do that. And we're always glad when we connect and when we do that. But just selflessly handling that difference is a great opportunity to grow as a couple.
Yeah. And so the question is, like, what's the right number, right frequency for you as a couple? Okay, yep. Not what other people are doing, or what you perceive other people are doing. And here's what I've come to find out, that people lie about how much sex they're having, okay? And they generally inflate the heck out of it, okay? This is also true, I've come to find out, the more people talk about having sex, probably the less they are having sex, okay? So the guy in the office, he's probably in sales, and this is pattern recognition, and he says, he'll say whatever. He's like, man, I can't go home, because if I go home, she'll just like tear my clothes off. You know, all she wants to do is have sex with me. That guy probably is not having a whole lot of sex, okay? And there's the guy down in IT. He doesn't say anything. He just, you know, that guy might be the luckiest person on the planet, and you'll never know, okay? But we're trying to get our cues from everyone else. And here's what's really cool is that the research would say, they asked couples where both of them would report mutual sexual satisfaction. So both of them are saying, hey, we both like our sex life, okay, not just one. And then they would ask them, how many times did they have sex? And you would get a number between anywhere between 2 and 20, where both of them are saying, no, like, we're good. And you would get something that would probably for some people would feel low, and for some people might feel high. And so it should give us a whole lot of freedom, right? The question isn't how much sex is everyone else having, which we tend to freak out about. It's what's right for us. How do we serve each other? Where are we at with our rhythm? Double income, no kids. That's a fun season. And then, sleep deprivation and diapers. That's a different time. Okay, empty nest can be fun, you know, if our bodies are still holding up, okay, and things like that, okay? And so there will always be rise, it'll just be different, right? And then even more the variables of our own different bodies. And, you know, a woman's sex drive will can, depending on what's going on hormonally, have wild swings. Guys tends to just kind of do this slow, steady decline, okay? And so, you know, we'll tell newlywed couples, like, man, you know, don't freak out about this. You know, there will you have the same sex drive? You know, maybe somewhere in the course of your entire married life, your sex drives will intersect, you know, at the same, you'll both have the same amount of sexual desire. But you'll probably be out of town those 2 days and you'll never get to, you know, take advantage of it. You know? So don't freak out and just kind of look for ways to serve each other. So this is helpful. I think it's just kind of funny to think about. You always want to have math in a sex talk. But on average, you know, a lot of times couples will have sex six times a month and 45 minutes per session. I don't know that. I don't remember where we dug this slide up, but 45 minutes. I mean, that is a double income, no kids, no one's knocking at the door. You don't have to get up. But this is a different season. So now. You know, it's like how fast can we have sex, you know, and get to bed? Drew's song about having sex before 9:30 and falling asleep on your own. That was genius. Okay. So whatever it is, however many times you have it, however long, if that math held true for you, this is what's crazy, that your entire married life, okay, you would have sex 0.625% of your entire married life. And before you got married, you thought about, well, that's all we're going to do is have sex, and it'll be such a giant piece of the pie on how we spend our time. And actually, it's not that big, okay? However, it's a really important piece of the pie. And it's crazy to me when I see these numbers, I'm like, what? 0.625 can have such an inordinate positive impact on a marriage, as well as cause so much strife and consternation and hurt. That little bitty sliver of time. And so we need to make sure that we serve each other, we're having good conversations, everything that we talked about, but we're not, as a totality, we're not gonna have sex all that much, okay? So handle the differences in desires, don't compare to anybody else, have your own unique number, and, you know, maximize the small portion of time that we'll have sex in our whole married life.
Yeah, good. Couples that have great sex life are also great communicators. And so this can be an area that's hard to communicate. And we know, man, just because of hurt or there's tension or it's just awkward, but learning to communicate about this area is really important. A lot of it comes back to expectations. And man, whether you know it or not, we all have expectations about, from the very beginning, what the honeymoon was going to look like, what it's going to look like now, just what that percentage was going to be. And so just recognizing the expectations and when they're not met, just the feelings that can bring. And so there's just some patterns and there's problems when the expectations are, first of all, if they're unknown. And so, man, I'm just frustrated. I don't know why. Had this expectation. I didn't even realize I had it. It was an unknown expectation. And then next, if they're unspoken, and so had this expectation, I'm sure John could read my mind, and the fact that he didn't act on it, he's just totally slighting me. But man, did I even speak it out loud? And then just, are they unrealistic? Like, is that even realistic for us right now with our family, and what does that look like? And so kind of understanding those negative just responses to expectations and then handling those well has been a big piece, I think, for us, for sure.
Yeah, and this is a growth area for us.
For sure.
So I'm still surprised, I don't know if you guys are this way, but how hard it can be sometimes to just actually verbalize some of the things that I want, I think, I feel, or whatever those kind of things. And so Pam was talking about the nonverbals. And so, you know, I don't remember this specifically, but this is not outside the realm of possibility. We're having dinner, you know, in some place in there, I kind of raise my eyebrows, you know, something which clearly means, I would like to have sex with you tonight. When the kids go down, I will be ready. You know, get your game face on too. I'll meet you in the bedroom. That's clearly what that means, you know. And so then we'll be ready to go to bed. And Pam's like, okay, well, you know, good night. I'm going to go to bed. I'll see you tomorrow. And I'm like, oh, she totally knew exactly what I said. And now she's just sticking it to me, you know. And then she'll ask, oh, are you mad? I'm like, oh, no, I'm not mad. I'm not mad, you know. And I won't even say it, but I'll be totally like, you know, pouting around the house, right? That's not a very good strategy. It's not a very good. Trust me. Ask me how I know, okay? Whatever your version of that is. And, you know, so just being forthright, hey. You know what? Tonight will be fun. If you're up for it, kids, you know, don't go nuts. That would be a lot of fun. And they'd say, well, I can or I can't. I thought, did you pick up my vibe? No, I didn't even know that. Okay. You know, that makes sense. I can see what, yeah.
Two eyebrows make this. We
like
need a code.
But you do, and which is always, that's not in our notes. You can have it's good to have a code word for your kids, like whatever, we won't tell you ours, but you can have like a, you know, you can just make a code word. So if it works, you work it in there. And
ours
and
is not doing taxes, but some people, they do a lot of taxes back in their bedroom. Yes.
Yeah. There's a guy on staff, and that was always there. We're going to work on our taxes. And he said, his boys were like, we know you're not working on your taxes in there, and we think it's gross. So, you know, whatever. Find your own thing. But I still laugh.
Another couple of thoughts. Yeah, on communication. Just that communicating. So back to desires and then just this piece of communication. I used to think early on was just communicating my desires to John. Felt maybe selfish. Like, hey, I would like this, or maybe I don't prefer this. I'd like this. And then just understanding, hey, again, back to the differences. I don't know what he likes. I can't read his mind. I'm not built the way he is. And so I want to hear from him. Hey, this is what I'd prefer. Not in a demanding way, but I'd love to meet that need. I'd love to try that. And so I know that he wants to hear that from me. So just being able to, again, not in a demanding way, but hey, I'd love to share with you if you're asking, and I think you want to know, I'd be interested in doing this, right? Maybe that's not my favorite. Maybe not in the middle of, we joke about like, don't hold up the scorecard, like right in the middle of, like that was a 9 tonight. You know, yesterday was, this is a 10, whatever, unless it's a 10. I guess if you do 10s, you could do a whole
10s scorecard. You can say that out loud.
Just the negative scorecard. Save those for later.
Yeah.
But just talking about that, I think, has been a growth area for me, just to say, hey, I know you want to know. Let's just share kind of what we'd like.
That's right. So it's very possible, right, to have sex, you know, with someone. So Pam and I could be married 27 years, and my idea of what's fun is totally different than hers, but that's what we've done for 27 years, and I didn't know. And Pam interprets it as, man, you're just really selfish. I'm like, I had no idea. I might be. I probably am selfish in some ways, but I don't know unless you tell me or if I told you. So just make sure. You know, a lot of times we're thinking about the physical components of sex, which is really important. But a lot of times there's other issues. Sometimes we're not doing great on communication, and we can do better than that. Okay. So another one: couples that have great sex life, they focus on more than just the climax. Okay, or orgasm, depending on what word you would use there. And so I'll show you this little diagram here. It comes from McCluskey. It's called the lovemaking cycle. And I think it's really helpful. And so if you can't read it, you might be able to zoom in with your phones. But four quadrants, we tend to focus in on the bottom right, the apex, that's, you know, climax, orgasm, those kinds of things. The fun part that gets a lot of airtime. But the atmosphere is the relationship in general. So that's things like, you know, do we have mutual consent, initiation? Do we trust each other? All those kinds of things. How intimate are we in every area of our relationship? Okay. The next one would be arousal. So that's foreplay, whatever that would look like, you know, for you. But letting passion kind of build and exploration, vulnerability, you know, playfulness, some of those kinds of things. And so, you know, the simple guy said, hey, sex is a lot like a crock pot. You start it in the morning and then you enjoy it at night, right? It just takes some time to get there, whatever that looks like for you. But sex can start in the kitchen in the morning for sure. Apex, so that's the fun part. You know, you're kind of surrendering control and all the really heightened pleasure. And then afterglow, that is where you stick around after the act, and affirmation, cuddling, restabilizing, okay? This is a growth area for me, probably like a lot of guys, task-driven, done, next, what, you know, there, and Pam doesn't really think that way. And so there is a prescribed amount of time that needs to transpire before you pick up the phone or the remote control, okay? Don't ask me how I know. I just know there is a time. How long is that? Just, if you pay attention, you'll find out. She'll, you know, one or both of you will know. And so, but what happens is, here's why this is helpful. A lot of times, all we focus on is just that bottom right quadrant. Like, how can we make that one little moment really, really intense and really, like, let's chase that thing and let's make sure that they happen at the same time. Okay. Very possible that one person won't have an orgasm. Very possible, more likely, that they won't happen at the same time. That's okay. Okay. So then for you, when you go, what would it look like, as Pam said, to take another step in our sex lives? It could be just to kind of lay this out here and go, hey, if we're going to take an area or take a step in one area. Which area needs some attention? Right? And then somebody's checking their mic in my... Can you guys hear that? It's only up here. Someone's checking their mic in the monitor. And it's a little distracting.
Pick one.
I feel a little crazy. Yeah.
Yes.
So they pick one of those. Have a conversation. Yeah. What would it look like for us to take a next step?
I think for me, it's been that just arousal, the atmosphere and arousal, kind of both of those, especially when the kids were younger, and just kind of thinking, oh yeah, like I'm gonna be exhausted. Probably we had 4 kids in 6 years, and so like, hey, what can I reserve in the energy tank, you know? And just kind of be thinking about it. Maybe even send some texts to John just during the day with the anticipation. And so just so it's not falling into bed at night and it's kind of an afterthought. Yeah. And so just kind of thinking about it, anticipating, making a little mark on my calendar, just kind of even remind me of that. So
yeah, that's such a pro move. So there's the best. Sex book I've never read. It's called Intimate Issues. It was by Dello and Pentus. Pam read it, and it was like awesome for our sex life, okay? So guys, if you're looking for a Christmas gift I think it was a gear. Is it specifically?
It's for women, intimacy. It's great.
So,
it's
but
so
here's,
good.
But here's what happened after that. So Pam read that, and then I would notice, you know, in our pantry, on our account, we'd put our calendar there, there would be these little certain days that would just say TS on them. And so it took me a little bit to figure it out, but those were the nights that the magic tended to happen. The same nights, whatever that was on the calendar. So there started to be some anticipation. If I woke up in the morning, I meet my cereal and it said TS there. And I was like, I don't know what it means, but I like what happens. And so I just told Pam, I was like, what does that mean? She goes, it's just a reminder for myself to think about sex. And you know, and she had little kids just all over the place, right? You know, pulling on her. And she just said, it's helpful for me to think about that throughout the day, because otherwise it's hard for me to get there. And which is just so appreciated. You know, just her just kind of, that would be probably the arousal piece for her. And there's things I can do, and there's things, you know, that you can do for each of us. And so, but yeah, that was TS. Those were two magical little letters for us. So, okay.
Great. Yeah. So the next one, just couples that have a great sex life, they have fun playing inside the boundaries. And so just talking about what's in and what's out of bounds. We're really clear scripturally on what a Christian couple, what it would be out of bounds for a Christian couple. And so just...
Let me put the slide up here.
Yeah,
so
there you go.
Okay.
Yeah. So kind of this outside boundary as you're thinking about your sex life and what's allowed and what's okay. And so these would be the things that would kind of be off limits. So we know, first of all, it can't involve others. So in Matthew 5, Jesus is talking and he says, you know, that Moses said like to commit adultery, you know, is out of bounds. And he said, I'll even take it a step further, to even think about a woman lustfully in your head is to commit adultery. And so we would say anybody other than these two people, either visually or physically, is out of bounds. And so it can't involve anybody else. The second thing, it can't be hurtful, either obviously in a physical way, but emotionally as well. And so back this morning to what Chris was talking about, that verse in Philippians, it says, do nothing out of selfish ambition, but looking to others' interests is more important than your own. And so it can't be hurtful in any way to your spouse. And then the last one, it can't violate either your conscience or your spouse's. And so if there's something that you're just not okay with, maybe it's okay for other couples. Maybe it's in bounds scripturally, but you're just not okay with it. Pushing through that would not be okay. Or I'm okay with it, but John's not. He's just like, I'm not sure about that. Kind of demanding that or pushing him to do that would be out of bounds. So those three things, involving others, hurtful, or pushing through something that feels to go against your conscience, would kind of be that outside block of just what is out of bounds for a couple, a Christian couple in sex.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah. And so then I think inside of that, then you've got this, I mean, it's pretty geometric. It's not always this equitable, but you've got for the husband, you know, kind of his box, the wife, her box, and wherever there's overlap, that's where you get to play and have fun and explore. The boxes might grow over time. I trust you more. I'm more comfortable here. Some of us, like, we go, you know, we came out of the gate probably unthoughtful, and we might need to rein it back in a little bit, and it might change. But wherever there's kind of mutual agreement there, then that's where you have fun, and you can talk about it. You say, "Hey, I'd love to talk about, you know, expanding that box a little bit." You can have that conversation, but you don't get to make demands, right? force someone to do something that they aren't comfortable with, or do anything that would involve others. And so, like looking at porn, thinking about someone else, or bringing someone else in physically. Those are clearly all out of bounds. And then the other part, you think, you pray. I would say err on the side of caution. You got a long time to have sex, right? And so you don't have to set any records this year. There's a lot of miles on those tires, okay? and so plan accordingly, and you can have fun over a season. So we've done this enough to know there's a few questions that always come up.
Yep.
In the hallway. So we'll try to address some of those specifically, run them through this grid here. So do you want to talk about oral sex for a second?
I will talk about oral sex. Great. I always get to talk about oral sex. That's the one. I'll let you talk about the rest.
Yes.
Oral sex.
That's the tame one, actually.
Yeah, it kind of is. So Song of Solomon, there's this part in there. This is a married couple, right? And there's a part in there where they're talking about blowing in gardens, sitting in shade, and upon further reflection, it's not a book about agriculture. This is a book about sex. And so it's pretty clear that these guys, I mean, we think that scholars would think that that's oral sex. So it's okay biblically. We take you back to that right there. If it's okay with the husband and the wife, then it would be okay. If it's not okay, one of you is like, I'm not sure about that. Maybe later, hit me back in a few years or whatever, but just not right now. Then it's off the table. And so that's just kind of a discussion between the two of you.
Yep. Okay. So another one would be role play. What about role play? What does the Bible say about role play? Nothing specifically. However, I think that same grid would work. Involve others, any push through conscience or be selfish. So this has never happened. But let's say Pam came to me and said, hey, I've got an idea. What if you dressed up like a plumber? Okay. And I've got this idea that I want to act out. And
so the plumbers last night, the roll call.
The plumber,
carry the theme.
The plumber crack was the punchline of a joke today. Yeah. Yes. So, okay. Let's say, I have no idea why someone would be turned on by that. But let's just say she was. And she said, that'd be really fun if you dressed up like a plumber and went under, and under our pipes or under our counter in the kitchen. And I came in and hopped on top of you. That sounds fun to me. What do you think? Okay. My first question for sure would be, are the kids in the house, just walking in, oh, mom's having sex with a plumber, oh, it's dad, the trauma. So I would ask, I definitely would ask, are the kids, look at Life 360, make sure they're with, 100 miles away everywhere. So after that, then you run it through the grid. Okay, so if I go, I don't want to be your little plumber boy, that sounds, no, please don't make me do that. Okay, is that a bounce? Okay, if Pam, used to, which none of this is true, by the way, but let's say she used to, date a plumber and they had sex, and so she's like, let's reenact that, that would be out of bounds. Or she'd seen some pornography or something, it's like, I want to act that out, okay? That would all be out of bounds. None of those were the case, and I was like, no, that's weird to me, but if that sounds fun to you, I'll be game, and I'd go get my little crescent wrench, and we could totally have at it, okay? So it could be right for one couple. Another couple is like, oh, heck no, right? We're not doing that. So that would be an example of that, okay? Sex toys, that would be another one. Not addressed in Scripture. I feel like the church in Corinth was so messed up. Like if it was going to be in anywhere in Scripture, it would be there. And Paul didn't address sex toys. That would have been the proper place, I think, to do it. So I would take you back to that grid. Okay. And so wherever you shook out on that one, you could never introduce that into the bedroom against the wishes of someone else. You could never do it. With thought or deed, visually with someone else, and you would never, do it in a selfish way or violate someone's conscience, okay? So I'd always, on anything like that, I would always err on the side of caution. So several years ago, we had dinner with a couple, and we didn't bring it up, they did. They brought up that, and I was like, okay, we're here, I don't have much to add to this conversation, but I was going to run them through the grid. I was like, let's see where you guys shake out on this. And so as they talked, they were kind, serving, everybody was okay with it. They'd actually talked, prayed, sought counsel, whatever. And so I remember leaving going, I think that was for those guys. I think that probably was okay. And then they told us that they put like all their stuff like in a little bag, and they travel with it, you know. And I'm just thinking at TSA, some guy watching this go down, you know, and if he says, can I look around in your bag? I'm like, no, just throw it all away. That's all right. We're not going through there. I would just err on the side of caution. Because again, okay, the goal is not to have the craziest sex, wildest sex, everybody's screaming and yelling and all that kind of stuff, which is fine. Like, if that happens, great, okay? But that's not the goal. We're re-coveting every time. And so it's sacred, and we don't drag it through the gutter or become selfish with it, okay? So what about, I'll tell you a story. A guy came to me several years ago, and he was so frustrated that his wife wouldn't do something that he wanted to do. And I was really angry about it. And I said, okay, man, we're here. I'm here for you. Let's talk this through. Tell me, you know, you think it's reasonable. I do, and she won't. I'm frustrated and all these kinds of things. I said, okay, well, tell me, where did that idea come from? Okay, because most of the stuff like this, it's not as if, you know, we're reading our Bibles in the morning, going through verse by verse through the book of Romans and go, I got an idea. I'm going to call her and we're going to do that, right? That's not where those ideas come from. They come from generally from pornography or things that we've done. And so I just said, tell me where that's come from. And, he said, yeah, I saw that in porn. And I said, okay. I said, hey, man, grace to you. God's held no wrath back for you on that. I believe you've repented and you're forgiven. But think about that. You saw something that literally Christ had to die for. Okay, you have two people having adultery, being mean to each other. Christ had to die for that. That's the kind of thing that sent Christ to the cross. And so what you're doing is you're taking that then, pulling something out of that you just saw and bringing that into your bedroom and making demands. And I remember he just goes, oh, that's not okay. I'm good. And I don't know if where they ever shook, I don't know if 5 years later she said, I'm game for that. But what I think was really, really helpful to that gentleman was for him to go, that idea didn't necessarily come from God. The actual thing could have been fine. It could have fit within the grid. But where it came from for him really mattered. And it really pulled the thorn from him to go, it came from a pretty dark place. And if my wife never does that, that's okay. I can still re-up the covenant. I can still have fun. I can still see sex as a good gift from God if we never do that thing. And I just see couples and it breaks my heart. They just get so stuck on this one thing. And whatever, it's not in the know. I'm going on a rant now. But like sex will never fully satisfy you. But sometimes we treat it as such, like if I just get this one thing, then I will be happy, right? And it's not. It's a meal that you will enjoy, but it's not like you'll never be hungry ever again. But we're so short-sighted in the way that we relate to each other sometimes because you just want this thing. You're going to be hungry 8 hours later, 6 hours later, 4 hours, 30 minutes later for me, and you're going to want sex again. If all your wildest fantasies came true, like tonight you went home, and here's the 15 things, and your partner goes, great, we'll do them all. It's not as if you're good for the rest of your life, okay? And so let's play the long game here. Let's think Christian. Let's serve. I don't know why I got off on that one. Anything else?
I think that's good. Just that long-term, the long-term view. We joke about you said I do. When we said I do, it was, our plan is to have sex until we're, 80 or maybe medical advances. Maybe it's longer, like 100. I don't know.
Amazing. That'd be amazing.
But just that long, would it be?
I think well, it would maybe. Be. Like a couple of hairless cats. I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, you did not say that. Where's the slide for that? No, there's no one. But just that long-term view, I think everything just with that grid also ran it through, like, is this short-sighted or is this putting our relationship just with a long-term view? Yeah. So, yeah. Okay, let's jump on.
Let's keep going.
Yeah. All right, couples stay out of ruts. And so if you look back and it's been the same place, the same time, the same position for the last 6 months, like, you might be in a rut. And so just thinking about putting some creativity into your intimacy, into your sex life. And so just kind of having some fun with it, just like you're dating, like when you were dating, just thinking through and making it kind of fun. So just here's some ideas, new times, new places, new locations, around the house or somewhere else. Board games, go to your game closet. Most games can be turned into a sex game. You might stay away from the longer games. Monopoly just kind of dwindled after a little bit.
Not whatever. Cool. Yeah.
Even if you were the banker, it just got,
not
it got
cool.
old. It was
not cool.
Fun.
I fold. You
yeah.
win.
Yeah. I'm cashing it all in. Forget it. What else? I'm trying to think of the other ones. Scrabble is the one that we just kind of were notorious for, like, just strip Scrabble is a good one.
Yes.
So you can just make your own rules. And I used to have a PDF I would secretly share with girls. Here's a PDF of
strip Very black
Scrabble.
Market, very yes. underground.
Was
yes.
Very right. underground, but talk to me later. Yeah. And just that anticipation, I think that, like, when you're going to have, you know, you're planning a date or you're just planning something fun, just the anticipation that can come towards specifically sex when you just put some ideas into it.
Yeah.
So I love the story about the dollars.
Oh, this is yeah, such a great story. So it's not our story. We heard the kids tell us about yeah. the parents. So adult kids, and they were telling this story that once they all moved out of the house, mom and dad went to Hawaii, and they were, you know, think like kind of very lower class, lower middle class, maybe, you know, just trying to get through life and make sure everybody's got shoes and food, you know. That's, and all of a sudden they're rolling to Hawaii in style, and the kids are like, "Mom and Dad, what in the world?" And they said, "Well, we started once we got married. Every time we had sex, we would put a dollar in the jar." And the kids were like, "Oh my gosh, like that's right." And they didn't, they said, "This totally flew over our heads." But what would happen is at the end of the day, dad would come in, we're in the kitchen, and dad would go, "I got a dollar." And mom would go, "I know where you can spend it." And we had no idea. We had no idea what that meant. And so to think about that, you're just laying on a beach in Hawaii going, "We all know how we got here," you know, that kind of thing. I just thought, how right and good is that, you know? And I don't know, but you could start that, you know, and then probably inflation adjusted, you might want to put something else in. I don't even know, you know, buy a Bitcoin every time. I don't know. And I thought, you know, we thought too late about this, but how cool would that be to give to your kids, you know, when they got married and say, "Hey, you know, without being weird, this has been a part of mom and I, we got you off. We're hopping on an airplane right after this, and we're going to blow it out. And we seeded your, you know, your journey. Here's $100 in there. Have fun. Celebrate the good gift that God has given you." You know, that's a really fun story.
Yeah. So yeah. Another couple of thoughts is just bringing others into this. Let me explain. Just if you're walking with other couples, you're in a small group or community group, just other like-minded couples that are for their marriage and are trying to honor God in this area. So appropriately. Level of detail, but just, hey, what are some ideas that you guys have? Maybe even just a little competition in your community group. Who can come up with, like, good ideas? Again, appropriate level of detail, but just kind of here's some ideas. Or as you're sitting with the girls in your community group, like, have, you know, is this something that you've run into this issue or this problem? And maybe what's an idea for that? And so just, again, appropriately bringing others around and just thinking of good ideas, kind of crowdsourcing this thing and just... Yeah,
with
it,
appropriateness, yes. Levels of trust, all the things. But yeah, that should be something in generalities, yeah. Right? In generalities, just as a Christian, hey, we're because we're in community, we care about you, how are the finances, how are the kids, you know, you're communicating. Are you guys communicating, following Jesus? Sex life, you guys prioritizing that? You guys doing okay? You know, That should be that type of thing. Okay, so some other resources.
Got some resources here.
Christian, this is such a mouthful. ChristianFriendlySexPositions.com. Okay, and so you
do
have
not
to,
look now because the fire like watermark won't let you look at it.
I think yeah, if you're on your cell service, you can. But if you're connected to the Wi-Fi, it'll block you.
A friend came up after and they were like, "You can't look at it right
yeah,
now."
Yeah, which is not. I didn't know that. It's a good thing. Yeah. I don't sit around in my office at Watermark and try to look that up. But
yeah. When you get home,
but I can't.
Look this up.
So what's helpful about that one is it's just like very, very simple, right? No, they're not people. They're not even stick figures. It's like the upper body and the lower body. And here's how they, you know, somewhat fit together and stuff like that, which is really funny. And it might take you a minute and go like, what are they even? Okay. You can go try. You see if you figure out what they're talking about. Okay. But in terms of just getting out of ruts, and so you could, you know, take a few of those and say, these look fun, and Once you pick three, and we'll pull one out of the jar, you know, every night and just see, you know, and if we're not as limber as we were in our 20s, we'll try another one, you know, kind of thing. And so that's, which is fine. Like as a couple, you should do that. Now, again, if your spouse is like, I hate that idea, please don't make me do that. Well, don't do that. Don't do that. Okay. But if you're in a good place, that could be fun. So Gary and Deb wrote the book called Married Sex. That is what our newlyweds now are reading, our foundation groups here. Just a good, if you just want a good book on sex, it just kind of covers, I think, most topics, I think, in a really tasteful Christian way. That's a good one.
It also doesn't pull any punches. I mean, it's all right there, but again, appropriately so.
Yep.
It's really good. Yeah, and then the last one, Julie Slattery. She is just a solid believer, but just expert in just the area of sex and just all the good and the hard parts of it and just the dysfunction. And so she's got a podcast. She's got
several books.
Definitely a trusted resource. So you just look up her.
But yeah.
Those are some
godly,
awesome
godly.
Great
and yes, yeah, so really, really funny. I won't tell you. I've got another story to end with, but
lots of stories for days.
Stories for days.
Okay. All right. So we'll have a QR code at the end where you can get all these slides and you can get those resources. But just another couple of points and then we'll wrap up. And then if you guys have just a couple of quick questions, we might have time for those. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. So couples that have a good sex life don't suffer in silence. And so just thinking about, we know if you've been married for any length of time, we know in a room this size, there's just hurt around this area. And so if you don't have it now, there'll be a time where the communication or just some part of it is just hurt, is hurtful, and it's just a hard part of your marriage. And so couples just raise their hand and say, hey, we need some help. If you're around some other couples, you again, just appropriately, you both know that you're going to share with the other people and you're trusted in what you're going to share, but hey, we need some help. Have you guys run into this? Can you help us kind of think through, ask questions? How do I understand and move with empathy toward my spouse if there's been some hurt? And so we know if you're a victim of any kind of sexual abuse, have been involved in an abortion, just those things and those hurts from even years and years ago, that will affect your intimacy. And so you're at a great place. Watermark has resources. They're in your book for any of those that have been a part of your story that you've willingly been a part of or that have been done to you and you've been a victim of that. And so we would just beg you for your sake and for the sake of your spouse just to raise your hand, go to one of those resources and get some help. And so don't suffer in isolation.
Yeah. And I would say, too, if you're sitting next to somebody that's a part of their story, well, hey, one of the things I've learned being an old guy is that some of us have that in our story and we've never told our spouse. And your spouse is going, it feels like I can't move toward you and I'm not sure. And that's the thing, and you know it. Like, man, you should be able to share that with the person that you came to this conference with, okay? And I would encourage you to take a courageous step to talk about that, okay? And use the resources that Pam just talked about. And then I would say if you're sitting next to someone and that's part of their story, you need to be a lot more patient and kind than you think you do. Okay, and so what I would encourage you to do is talk to someone else. So, for example, if Pam had been sexually abused, it would really be helpful for me to talk with another husband who has walked the same road and can give me some pointers, can tell me what to do, what not to do, how to love my spouse, read up on that. Even though technically that's what happened to Pam, because we're married, because Jesus says we're one, it's an issue that's affecting us both. And there's work in some respects for both of us to do. So you're going to be a little more patient and kind. You're going to need to be a little more patient and kind than I think you think you need to be, okay?
And I just say there's hope there. We have a good friend who years ago, that was part of her story, and she just thought, I'll never get married. That's not going to work. And God just brought her this man, and they were married. And as they worked through just the abuse in her past, now they've got a great, vibrant sex life. She said they had to do some work, but like she never thought that would even be on the table for her. And so there are just story after story after story of hope here at this place. So just please, we would just beg you just, hey, for yourself and for your marriage, just say, hey, we need some help. We totally believe that we're not, because of anything we've done or been a part of, that now we're on this plan B, that God still wants the very best. And just, really again, good. That vibrant sex life for y'all to have. And so just raise your hand. Don't suffer in silence. And then the last one, we just want to circle back to the goal, is every couple in here, the goal is just to have your own unique conversation. Just leave here with one thing that you can do to take a step towards oneness.
Yeah. Yes. And I think again, the conversation is not to make selfish demands. Hey, what'd you hear? What would you like to talk about? What's a growth area for us? How could I love, serve you better? There are things that I'm not aware of that I should be so that I could, again, love, serve, pray, help you with. What would be fun? What would be something that would knock us out of our ruts? What's something a little adventurous? Let's go shop for clothes together, right? Or skinny clothes, lack of very little clothing together. Like whatever that is, like go do that, okay? But please, whatever you do, don't come out of here and make selfish demands. It's just decidedly not Christian. We don't do that. That's not what Christians do, is to make selfish demands. I think Philippians 2, 3 through 4 has already been quoted like 3-4 times today. It's a great marriage verse. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or empty conceit, but consider others is more important than yourself.
Best sex verse in the Bible.
It's a great sex verse. Okay. That's probably anything else.
No, any other? Good.
If there is physical issues, there can be. Go see a doctor. Sometimes there can be trauma that I still would work through the church and your small group and recovery ministry here. But there could be help from seeing someone who specializes in whatever type of trauma that you've experienced. That would be helpful physically. Again, medically or sexually, you can actually have some kind of physical sex issue. That can be a thing. And if you quoted memorized a bunch of Bible verses, it probably wouldn't fix that. And so go talk to somebody who can help you with that. It's okay. It is an amazing time to be alive, candidly. And I think about people that, a couple thousand years ago had to suffer with all types of things. And now there's a lot of really amazing treatments for different things that are going on sexually. Okay.
Yeah. So you can reach out to us for trusted resources and just reach out to the marriage ministry.
Yep. Perfect. So when Pam and I got married, we did our premarital counseling with a couple, just wise, godly couple that had a reputation of having a really, really great marriage. So Pam and I got married really young, 22 years old. Okay, we were just such kids. We thought we knew everything about everything. Realized we didn't know anything about anything, but at the time we were so smart. And so we asked this couple if they would do our premarital counseling, and they said yes. And I think it was like 5 weeks. And so we walked in 1 week, and the vibe was just a little different. And it pretty quickly figured out, okay, tonight's the night we're talking about sex with these guys. And so he said, hey, Pam, why don't you and Susan go sit out by the pool? And, John, you and I will go for a walk. And I remember Pam and I both just like cutting eyes at each other like, oh no, like, we're having the conversation with these guys who look like older than our grandparents. And they just, they were like 55, but they just, but they really do.
Like, the guy especially.
If you want to know what he looks like, just add 20 to it. Godly man, but just add 20. So truly think 22.
And he looks the same age now. It's funny. He looked 80 when he was 55. He still looks 80.
So just think 75, think 22 and 75. Yes. You want to picture two dudes walking through the neighborhood talking about graphic detail about us. Graphic detail. It's like, dude, I wasn't sure if he was punking me just to just see if I could squirm. And I did a couple times. So we're walking and he's telling me all the things, asking me all kinds of questions and things like that. It was really helpful. He was really wise. And he stopped at one point. He just looked at me. He goes, you know what? He goes, sex with Susan now, better than it's ever been. And sensory overload. I didn't know what to do. And I had like a little like physical, like, thinking about this too, having sex. I'm 22, and so I thought two things. One is like, that's gross. And two, there's just no way. That can't be true, right? I mean, is this we have the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus, and now when couples get married, we tell them, hey, sex gets better as you get older. Like, haha, and now I'm going to have to take some little 22-year-old kid and perpetuate the myth. That's kind of what I thought, And I was doing some research a few years ago, and I remember I ran across an article, and it was the decades where couples are reporting the highest levels of marital sexual satisfaction, mutual sexual satisfaction. What decades? And one of the highest was that 50 to 60. And I just pushed back, and I was like, oh my gosh! I remember that conversation so vividly. Which made no sense to me at 22, when 50 to 60 is one of the decades that couples will report both people having the highest levels of sexual satisfaction, right? So for some of you young kids, I'm looking at you, that's your parents. And they're home alone right now. Right? And some of you are like, hey, you know what? Like, we've got permission now to enjoy this, okay? And do you have a sex as often at 59 as you did at 29? Probably not, right? But what that couple knew that Pam and I didn't, what it was a symbol of the covenant. And they had journeyed together through some really great, really hard times. They had served each other. They had forgiven each other. They had grown together. They had sacrificed together. And every time they had sex, they were celebrating their covenant. And they were telling the truth. Sex for them was better than it had ever been. And friends, that's our hope. That's the good gift that God's given us that we're supposed to strive to enjoy. And we just encourage you to take your next step, have your next conversation, and if we can help as a church, please let us know. Guys, thanks so much. Have a great day.
Okay? Thank you, guys.